hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 110 of Destroy All Culture with me, Adam P. Nave, and Aiden Morgan, because, see, I'm still screwing that up. God damn it.
close, though. I mean, as long as you get our names right, that's really the thing I care about.
That's fair. Now next week, I have to make sure to get our names wrong.
Excellent.
Yeah, just because.
Why not?
So, let's see. It's been a week. We're closing on the end of summer. Which is lovely. It actually, like, stopped being stupidly hot.
Yeah, suddenly, it's like the dial on the thermometer just turned down, which was been really nice, because we've been experiencing some pretty freaking hot temperatures. And now today it's raining, and it's only 16 degrees Celsius for a high? What the hell? That's cold.
Yeah, we're waiting for, like, measurable rain. Like, there's been a little bit of drizzle. Like, there hasn't been, I don't think, measurable rain since May.
Oh, my God.
Or very much of it.
Right.
Well, there was nothing in July or August so far. But it's supposed to, like, actually rain today, theoretically, and I know it was drizzling last night.
Oh, nice.
So,
well,
I'm excited.
We just need rain to get rid of some of the smoke.
Right.
And I think that's what's been giving people headaches and such around here.
Oh, God,
the air quality
lately
has been terrible.
We had an amazing twofer here. We had a week of smoke from California fires that was pulling up to us. And then we got, like, a two-day break, and then the wind shifted to clear it, which was a two-day break. But it shifted pulling down, which meant after that break, we got the California fires.
The BC
Canada
fires.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, God damn it. So that broke.
Not all Canada is on fire, Adam. Just a province.
The entire west side of it is. Jesus.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's kind of like somebody's arm just kind of being on fire.
Well, it's like last year, a lot of Portland was on fire.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I remember that.
Some teen started a fire on, like, one of the big trails, and it caught and was terrible. So this year wasn't that bad, comparatively. It was, like, 2 weeks instead of one, because... And again, you know, I'm, like, bitching about, like, oh, there was some smoke, when it's like, yes, but we weren't actively on fire, you know?
Right.
So... Anyway, there was TV stuff. I kind of wanted to start with Winona Earp, if you're game.
I'm game.
Because I realized, like, you know, some shows, and I guess I'm kind of used to it, but it threw me this week. A lot of shows that just are summer shows, or, you know, like, only 10 seasons, they aren't doing, like, the full old, like, September through the summer 22-episode thing.
Right.
Don't get to do, like, oh, it's Christmas season, let's do our Christmas episode.
So let's do a Christmas at the end of August.
Right, because it's when it would be. But it really did jar me for some reason.
Yeah, no, I know the same thing. I was watching that entire Christmas episode, and I was like, it isn't Christmas. I think we're just so conditioned by growing up with network television to, like, see, like, to have our TV holidays sync up with our real holidays.
Right. Yeah, I was just like, why is there a Christmas episode? And I'm like, you know what, if you're rewatching it, whatever, it's never going to matter to you.
True.
Because, like, you rewatch stuff all the time. It's like, oh, it's a Halloween episode. You know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Chuck thing is still my favorite ever.
Oh, nice.
The first season of Chuck, where they had their Thanksgiving episode and their Christmas episode back-to-back.
Oh, that's right.
Except there was, like, a cliffhanger at the end of the Thanksgiving episode, and it picks up, like, 2 days later, but it's their Christmas episode? And even whenever you watch, like, Chuck Downs, it's like, it throws me so weirdly, because I'm like, that's not how calendars work.
Well, you guys have your Christmas and your Thanksgiving pretty close together.
Sure, but it's still a month.
It's still a month. It's true.
Like, yeah, it's a little weird to me. And like I said, like, just for network TV stuff, like, I get, like, if there's a small break because stuff stops airing, that you might want to do them back-to-back-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always weird to me to have, like, two holiday episodes back-to-back in the first place.
Yeah.
And then to have that thing that's like, oh, it's just, like, 2 days later. I'm like, whoa.
But yeah, no, this whole like witches open in a Christmas episode. I think part of it was that there was never any reference to what month it was before this.
Right.
And so just like something like, oh, I guess it's December.
Yeah.
It's just it was weird.
I mean I'm already sort of thrown with Winona Earp about because most of this season seems to take place in winter, so it's keep on tuning in to see snow every week.
Right. So I mean that's when they were filming, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean it would be really weird if they filmed in summer and then just trucked in tons of snow, and then said, "Oh my God, we blew the budget on snow. Why did we even do that?"
You know what they could do.
What's that?
They could film in summer and then have the characters talk about this all the snow and this great fight. You know, Dark Matter pulled that off fantastically. Let us never forget. The great right. Dark Matter. There was all this snow. No, there wasn't. oh, God. No, this season is fun. I don't know, there's a bunch of this episode that didn't quite land for me, because it's a transitional episode for the season.
That's true, yeah. But there was one Christmassy detail. There was a couple of Christmassy details that I thought deserved special mention.
Yes.
One is the menstrual angel. Angel made out of
that
tampons.
Was great.
Yeah, it was amusing. Other is the almost passed over detail of... Earp's mother, I can't remember the name of the mother, played by Megan Follows, but her pendant was a star-shaped bottle opener.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, there's a scene early on where they're just talking, and she just sort of looks, she has a bottle of beer, she just sort of reaches up and goes, like that, and I'm like, what? And then
That's
you see
awesome.
That her pendant's a bottle opener. It was freaking great.
Yeah, no, again, like, it's a weird transitional episode, which is fine. I mean, you know, in the longer season, it'll be good. But just, so far, the season has been so focused.
Yeah.
And then, so this just kind of took me out of it a little bit, just between the Christmas thing and just the, we're kind of moving on to a different phase of stuff and all that. It just, I don't know, not that it lost me, it felt like a step down from the other episodes of the season, just because of where it landed.
Yeah, I think it also felt like some of the decisions didn't feel as motivated to me. Like for like the previous episode, I mean, it was essentially about like it seemed like almost like a meta commentary on shows that sort of insert characters. So you had that demon posing as Jolene, this lifelong friend of theirs,
right.
Kind of like Dawn and Buffy, I guess, and you know them sort of slowly figuring out, wait a minute, this person isn't what we think she is. And in this episode, suddenly you've got this romantic interest for Winona, but he just kind of shows up in the early on, and I was like,
right.
Oh, this is something that'll develop over a few episodes, and but no, it's just suddenly
funny.
they're smooching, and I'm like, this isn't quite land,
you know,
for me.
The white boys all look alike thing, the Chris problem, as it is known.
Yes,
when that guy showed up at first, I thought he was that other guy from Black Badge.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wasn't he supposed to not come back? And then it was like a different guy. I'm like, okay, so you're just some other generic white boy. That's fine.
Yeah. The other thing was, is I didn't quite feel the Doc's decision at the end.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like, they've been sort of telegraphing it a little bit. A
little bit.
But, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, transitional episode, right? Like, where it goes from here will decide pretty much how we look back at this, rather than
right.
treat it as its own episode.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, pieces were moved, is all I can think of for this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just kind of moved some pieces that were reset. And
yes,
just kind of like, now here's where we're going. Which, again, is technically fine. It's not that it was a bad episode of TV. It was just, it did feel a little bit weaker than usual.
Yeah, but I mean, we've got Bobo Del Rey back in the mix.
Which is always a joy, right?
Precisely. Yeah, when they, in the previous, was it the previous episode when they showed him again? Or yeah, I was like, oh, good. He's here again.
Right,
that's,
like he's, yeah, he's still in the well. They've done that a few times.
Bobo's in the well.
Which, you know, the first time I did it, I was like, what is this, a zombie? And, want, want.
Yeah, how often do they have like undead people in wells in these shows?
I know, right? Like, I feel like I need to like get the okay and like build a well out, dig a well, just in case.
if you have a demon or undead figure that you need to store somewhere, just build a well, not
right.
a jail, a well.
Yeah, that is the move. randomly. So you know the CW superhero show schedule is changing again. They have Sundays now, so it's like Supergirl's on Sunday and Green Arrow's Monday and Flash is Tuesday.
Right.
And I guess Legends is behind one of them. I don't know off the top of my head. I can look it up while we're talking. But
sure. Oh, hey, apparently they're bringing back Tyler Hoechlin as Superman.
Well, this is what I was going to say.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, by the way, it's Sunday as Supergirl at 8 Eastern, of course. We're just talking Eastern here. And then Monday is Legends at 8, and then Arrow at 9, and then Tuesday is Flash, and then Black Lightning.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Black
and
Lightning.
Then Wednesday is like Riverdale and some other show, and then Thursday is Supernatural and some other show that I don't really care about. But for the crossover there, of course, they're moving stuff around, so it's, you know, Flash, then Arrow, then Supergirl. Legends won't be a part of it.
Right.
And it's their big Batwoman crossover.
Yes.
And yeah, they've mentioned that, like, we're bringing back Superman for all three parts, and they're also going to cast Lois Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Which tells, at least, I'm 95% sure it tells me something interesting about what they're doing with this, and I think it's a great move. Because, you know, they're already trying to develop the Batwoman show, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this crossover kind of has to take place on Supergirl's Earth.
Oh.
Because you could bring over Superman, but bring over Lois feels weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if they put it on Supergirl's Earth, right? Whatever that is, like 38, I think is the TV show number for it.
Yeah.
Earth 38. Then you get to do a Batwoman Supergirl World's Finest, like, mini crossovers.
Ooh, yeah, that's true.
And, like, Flash, Arrow, or whatever form of the other three with Legends, like, smaller crossovers. So you don't have to do the giant. Because, again, after Earth X, like, doing a big giant one is going to be hard to top.
Yeah.
And I think the next time they do one, they're going to have to do it, like, five or six shows, and it'll be, like, Crisis, you know, on Infinite Earths type of thing. But yeah, no, I think they're building the Batwoman show to be on Supergirl's Earth instead. Which is interesting. And again, it would give us, like, a World's Finest stuff.
Yeah. And I think so, that's actually not a bad idea to sort of...
I think it's a great
build
idea.
Build out these worlds in that way. yeah, that's sort of... Because then you can sort of... You can continue to develop these sort of parallel worlds with their own sort of little...
Right. And building up the Supergirl world lets you move cast members around some, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they need to, but it gives you the option.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to have, like, well, why is this character, like, always in Supergirl? Because it's the only place we have for any characters in that world. Whereas, you know, you could have people move to Gotham type of thing.
Right. I'd like to know which particular Earth the Gotham show is located in.
I don't want to know.
I think it's a silly Earth. Very silly.
There you go. Sillier. So what else? Oh, Killjoys happened.
Oh, yes.
What did you think of this week's episode of Killjoys?
Well, they didn't kill the joy. Actually, I really like this one. I mean, there's... Throwing a sudden new character who's like a precocious child into the mix of a show is always... It's risky.
Right.
It's always risky because suddenly there's a whole different kind of dynamic between characters, and always there's the problem of the precocious child who can often come across
sure.
as, you know, sort of like Adric from Doctor Who rather than, you know, something that anybody wants to watch. But in this case, I really like that. I really like that little tyke they've got on the show.
Yeah, I think that they're doing the right thing with him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is they are using him to, A, tell you about the character. You know, that we learn a
yes.
lot about who Jack is.
Right.
But also, all of his interactions make the other characters interact with each other and shows more about who each of the other characters is and how they actually interact
yeah, exactly.
on a new level.
Yeah.
And, which is the best case scenario, right?
Like, yes. And this episode probably had one of the most unexpectedly tense moments I think I've ever seen on Killjoys. When you see that, you see just how fucked up Dutch is in certain yes. ways. You know, when she basically sort of like invites, you know, Jack to sort of witness some torture and Devon just straight up says, you know, Klein wasn't readying you for something or training you. It was abuse.
Yeah, I that's and been that, in all of our heads, I think,
yeah,
for a few years now. Like, this was actually abuse. Let's stop romanticizing it.
Yeah.
And to have someone finally just say it yeah. was shocking.
Exactly, because it felt like something from our world suddenly, like some sort of like actual real element that we always that you know that we have to deal with on a personal level in society, suddenly injected into Killjoys, and it was just, I think the phrase is shit got real in that moment.
Yeah,
like you suddenly remember the emotional stakes going like for all these characters.
Right. Well, because I mean, let's face it, like. The way TV shows and genre stuff especially works, but any TV show, like any cop show or whatever, is always the, like, oh, well, you know, this character's a badass, and that's awesome, and see, they were trained since birth, and it's always kind of done with this, like, that makes them cool. And it's like,
yeah.
But we just accept it, right? Like, we all know yeah. it's fucked up, but we, right. it's just such a convention that we're like, yeah, sure. Like, if that happened in real life, that's fucked up. But it's a convention of the genre, so we'll let it go. So yeah,
exactly.
having them suddenly dip back to, also, that's terrible, and you should never do that to a child. Like,
exactly. And you tend to forget with Davin, because he so often sort of, he plays, Luke McFarlane kind of plays the character a little bit for laughs, and also he's basically walking beefcake, so you forget that the character has these, like, has some wisdom behind him.
And then he grew up in an abusive family.
Precisely.
Both him and Johnny did. And, like, you know, Johnny's kind of softened because of it, so it never happens. And now that Dav has a kid,
mm-hmm.
like, it's in the forefront of his brain.
Exactly, yeah.
And I love how just perfectly they've turned some of these things.
Yes. Yeah, and it's instead of, I mean, they could have done it, they could have done this badly. They could have had, you know,
yeah.
Davin sit there and go, I was abused as a kid, and now that I've got a kid, I've got to think about being a parent. Instead, they actually had him react in a way that he might not have previously, or wouldn't have the wherewithal to do it, but now.
Right, and they don't have to tell you why, like, it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, again, he doesn't lash out at the kid over it.
Yes.
Which is important to him and his character.
Mm-hmm.
I did think they did the whole name thing really well, too.
That was
adorable. Come on.
That was adorable. Also, it produced one of the funniest lines in Killjoys, when he's like, you know, name me Osmond Kinrick, and Dav goes, doesn't even have any apostrophes.
Yeah.
Which
I thought you were going to go for the other great line of it, which is physical contact is for the poor.
Oh, that's Jesus. But I do like the fact that Delcea is now human again, can now feel all emotions, but she's just fucking horrible anyway.
Well, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
It's who she was, you know.
Yeah. And they're not making her unhorrible, you know, for the sake of, like, the character for the show, which I thought was grand.
Yeah.
Yeah, this episode was kind of a standout for me. I really liked it.
Yeah, the writer's room is amazingly good at nailing emotional beats in the middle of this mm-hmm. madness.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. You know, and still making sure that, like, there were jokes. So it's like the whole Pip thing is, you know, tragic and all this, but you're still kind of watching it with, like, this yay fun in a weird way.
Yeah.
Because they're finding ways to kind of almost make light of it.
Yes. Oh, yes. Ah, Pip, gonna die. Oh, also funny. Also great moment is Lucy relaying a Zephyr's message.
Yeah.
But just a little, like, Tams and McDonough just kind of, like, reading out essentially, you know, Zephyr's lines and that monotone. It was just
Yeah, well, I think that started actually when Pip first showed up on the show. And it was like, you know, tell them I did it. Tell them I solved their problem. Like, it just,
right.
Is the hot one seeing anyone? It's just like, it was this weird, stream of consciousness from Pip.
Yes.
But being read, in Lucy voice just made it so much funnier for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought they really knocked it out of the park by doing, Zeph's kind of, stuttering sort of repetition start. Yeah, with Lucy's monologue. Yeah,
and of course, remember, never send a killjoy to do a warlord's job.
Right.
We have angered Pree. This is not good.
Oh, that was great.
So, this show is just firing on all cylinders right now.
It really is.
As hit the back half of the season. Not that it wasn't before, but I mean, just even more so. This episode just had everything.
Yeah, it did. This episode had everything. It was really good. It's funny because watching that in tandem with Winona Earp, which is still a fun show, but I feel like it's sort of stumbling through a few tropes that it isn't quite shaking off properly.
They are adding cast members, which Killjoys is too, but they're also losing cast members, which is, you know, a little harder. And frankly, their season is longer. They usually have 13 episodes.
Oh, that's true.
So they haven't quite hit that halfway point. Or, I mean, this kind of was their sort of transitional halfway point-ish episode.
Right, yeah.
And I think that has something to do with it.
Cool. I prefer Killjoys to Winona Earp. It's more in my bailiwick, but it's still, I mean, Winona Earp still has...
Oh, yeah, no, I still really like Winona Earp.
Fun stuff, yeah.
But no, Killjoys is it sets itself apart.
Yes.
Even if I still, I don't mind it anymore, but I still do miss the original theme music, I gotta say.
I know we won't ever get
it back, but...
Yeah. So you'll just have to, sit there at home, playing it to yourself.
Yep.
We're on repeat.
Yep, that and, the Terriers theme.
Yeah, that was such a great theme.
I do love because you know the weirdness of that theme, right? The Terriers thing?
I don't know the
weirdness.
It's
not a real song.
Oh.
The guy who does their music, wrote enough of this song to be the opening, but there's no more of the song.
Oh, okay, yeah, yes, that's, I knew that.
And it's, I'm like, but I want to hear the whole song. It's like, yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, because it does sound like an actual tune that they... some lost pop catalog they plucked out of, yeah. Damn, that's a real shame. But I think the original, the first season Killjoys theme was just written, there was nothing more than that, just few, 15 seconds or whatever written,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Also
it was
not
just
a
kind
song.
Of like, this is all we could afford, and then they could actually license the music and do a different opening, and so they did.
Yeah, it
but
is
of
a
course,
little more,
at this point, they're not going to get money for another one, because, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a little weird that I mean their current theme song is good, but it feels a little generic compared to the first one that they chose.
Sure, you know, and I don't know, I do kind of wish they'd either kept changing it every season.
That'd be cool.
But I mean, again, at this point, this is the ride we're on for the rest of the episodes. So
yeah, that will do. Speaking of themes. I did appreciate in the post doll episode that they performed a slowed down version of the theme song. I thought that was.
I was wondering, are we gonna keep that? Because that's a weird touch, but I love it. You know.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I was glad they did it, and I was glad they went back to the original theme afterwards. It just seemed appropriate.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and other weird TV news. I don't know if you heard. Hulu is apparently really close to striking a deal for a Veronica Mars miniseries.
I have heard this.
8 episodes?
Oh.
It's interesting to me because, everyone assumed it'd be Netflix.
Yeah.
Just because of, everything that was going on. And it's Hulu just apparently swept in, and instead of doing, because originally they were talking about doing, one movie, every few years.
Mm.
You know, or kind of the Gilmore Girls thing of two or three long, 90-minute episodes that it looks like they're just gonna do just a short 8-episode season. and call a miniseries, see how it does, and then keep doing them.
Well, I'm on board with that.
I am curious if they are going to hold to the rule that they had, which is because, you know, Rob Thomas wrote two novels.
Yes.
And according to him, they were in continuity, and anything he does happens after that second novel.
Okay.
And I don't think I ever read the second one. I read the first one, and I liked it, but I just forgot to get the second one, I think. But I'm just curious if they're going to hold up to that. Which should work, because it shouldn't take more than like a quick recap. You know, it's like it deals with a few loose ends from the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I meant to read at least one of the novels, and I just never got around to it.
Yeah, it was a little weird for me reading the first novel, because it wasn't first person.
So it wasn't written in Veronica Mars's snarky
voice.
Right,
yeah. And that kind of threw me at first, because, you know, Veronica Mars, like, that's what I'm used to.
Right. And I mean, there's literally, I mean, the show has, like, her voiceover. So
right.
It's the show is kind of told in her voice, so.
So yeah, that might throw you.
Hmm. Oh, well.
But also, you saw something that I have not.
Oh, yes. I saw Hereditary.
And how was it? I don't know.
No, it's funny. It's funny you say it like that, because actually Alana and I were having this conversation as she feels that it was actually the name is too long. It should be Heredity and not Hereditary. And because I was watching the show, and for some reason the name kept sticking in my head, and I started making up anagrams.
Huh.
For Hereditary, which, so instead of being really, really absorbed, my brain was sort of like rearranging letters in my head. Retired Hay was probably the best one. the one that I came up with. It was, you know, getting the longest word and the shortest word. I was very pleased with myself. Anywho, yeah, it's part of, I mean, I suppose it's part of the horror renaissance that, in which movies like, you know, The Babadook and It Follows and whatnot all fall
right
into. These, you know, part of this thing, people going, hey, horror movies can be good. And I think Hereditary is one of those, it's one of those films where you just, if you're in the moment with it, it's really gripping and terrifying as all hell. If you have any distance,
right,
you begin to say, well, what about this and what about that, and then the whole thing seems utterly implausible. I mean, not just the supernatural aspect, it's just there's just lots of unanswered bits and pieces that when you get to the ending, you have to sort of forcibly make yourself ignore the unanswered bits in order to sort of enjoy the thing as a whole.
Okay.
But it definitely, and part of the, I'm thinking one of the best parts of the movie is also kind of its undoing, and that is Toni Collette's performance, because she is so good that,
oh yeah, she's amazing in everything. I mean,
she is, and I mean, but she just, she does things with line readings, and like there's just all kinds of lines that would be good in a mediocre performer's hands, but when she does them, it's extraordinary, right? It's just,
yeah,
it's an amazing performance. And the problem is that ultimately, in some ways, the movie isn't really about her character. And as soon as it's not about her character, they're just like, why didn't you do this with her more?
Right.
And so I almost think the movie would have been better served with a less able performer, frankly.
Huh.
Which is a weird thing to say.
No, but I understand it.
Because for the first three quarters, I mean, it really is her movie, and then it takes a turn, and it becomes about her son, who was, I mean, not a peripheral player, but he was just part of the ensemble. And then at that point, it's like, when it's no longer about her concerns, which is really about the experience of motherhood and how complicated and horrific it can be, then the movie sort of loses what makes horror movies really work, which is a really good sort of metaphorical underpinning. And then it's like, well, now it's just a bunch of crazy images, and
That's
it's
fair.
and now it's just about, and I thought now it's about freaking people out more than anything else. But yeah, I would recommend Hereditary, but I'm not sure it was I'm not sure it's up with, It Follows or The Babadook, however.
Gotcha.
So I mean, not that this is like a whole genre of its own now, but it's but and I'm kind of looking forward to what Ari Aster, who the director does. There's some one of the things you is it has one of the most like jarring opening shots of a movie I think I've seen in years, and it's not like a scary jump cut or anything. It just does something I was wholly not expecting. It starts off in a room and it sort of zooms in on a dollhouse slowly, and then a room in the dollhouse becomes the set. Like it suddenly just transitions seamlessly into the action, and you just don't see it coming, or maybe you do, but it's done so well. It's really, really something. And then you realize that the entire house is kind of, all the sets of the house are kind of built to be kind of like a dollhouse in
Nice.
ways that are deeply unsettling. Like the windows are a little too big and the ceilings are too high, except in the attic when the ceilings are just, or the attic bedroom when it's just a little too low for some reason. And like the wainscoting comes up too high. And walls seem like, and there's this one, like a classroom, and the walls just don't seem quite substantial enough, and you know it's deliberate, but you can't help but
Right.
sort of be just destabilized by it. It is like just, yeah, it was applause worthy. It was so
That's
clever.
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's actually because I have a bunch of friends who do like a horror movie night and all this. I don't join in because I'm not hugely big into horror movies. Like, I think my two
Fair
favorite horror
enough.
movies, and when I say favorite, keep in mind that, like, I try not to watch them. Like,
Right.
they're the ones that like honestly freaked me out.
Yes, yeah.
So like, they are my favorite horror movies, and I will show, well, one of them I will show to people because I can still withstand it. The other one I try not to watch. I actually bought it on VHS and then bought it on DVD just so I like captured the demon.
Oh, yeah.
If that makes
Okay.
sense. Like, the like I want to own this, but I intend to never see it.
Right.
And that's The Hitcher, like the original Hitcher.
Oh my God.
Just remembering scenes of that movie fucks me up.
Oh yeah. I haven't seen The Hitcher in so long, but that was.
I actually remember because I actually saw Rutger Hauer in person once.
Oh.
And it was, I swear to God, it was like 2, 3 in the morning in New York, walking down the street, like walking home from a friend's house.
Oh jeez.
And this was like, poo, when was this? This was like 98, 99. Walking back from a friend's house, and it was like 2, 3 in the morning, like I said. And there's this guy, and he's, and again, like, I grew up in New York, and I'm not like, oh no, I better cross the street. There's someone coming down the block of me. Like, I don't do that in
Right.
general, because I'm a white guy, and what do I care, right? But this guy's walking down me. He's fairly large, and I shit you not, wearing, like, all black with a black leather trench coat and fucking little sunglasses.
Oh my God.
And I just had that, like, instant moment where it's like, and I crossed the street. Because I was like, fuck this. And as I
It's
crossed street, I was like, holy shit, that was Rutger Hauer. Like, I should have, like, gone back and been like, dude, you're awesome. But, like, also, it's like, there was no way I was ever going up to this man. Like, that was just not a thing that was about to happen.
fair enough, fair enough.
And so much of that, like, I love a lot of Rutger Hauer thing. It's like, obviously, like, Blind Fury and Blade Runner and, like, I there's a number of, like, old crappy-ass movies that, like, I'd watch just because Rutger Hauer was in them. That one where he's the FBI agent where Gene Simmons is the bad guy.
Oh my God, yes.
There's some crappy, I think it's not called, it's not Ring of Steel, that's a different crappy movie. There's like some like movie where it's like supposed to be like, this guy inherits this sword and it's sort of Highlander-ish and these aliens and he's this big guy. But it has Rutger Hauer on the box and it's like, and with Rutger Hauer, and he's in like the first like 4 minutes of the movie and then he's gone. And I was so upset. So like, I adore Rutger Hauer. But thanks to Hitcher, like I see Rutger Hauer at night. I found out that like, I'm just, no, I cross the street. Fuck that. Fuck that. I just no other thought in my head except get away. And again, see, perfectly, like, wonderful person. Like, you know, he pretty much stopped acting just to do, like, fundraising for kids and, like, beautiful human being. But Hitcher fucked me up for life.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but it's been so long since I've seen that film.
Like, I know the big thing, like, because they did a remake of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the thing that killed me with the remake, and I never actually saw it, but the trailers told me the thing I needed to know about it. Which is, if you remember Hitcher, the single most horrifying scene in the movie is the truck scene.
Yeah.
Which they cut away from. So all you get is the audio from it while something else is going on.
Right.
And your brain fills it in the worst way possible. Like, guaranteed, everyone who's ever seen this movie, you remember that. Because it's just like, oh god. In the remake, apparently, they leave it on camera and show it to you. And I'm like, you've lost the point of this movie. Like, the point of the movie is not ever gore or anything. Like, it's pure psychological.
Mm-hmm.
And by keeping away from the gore, they just kept you in that, like, tense psychological place where it just fucked you up. The other, of course, is May.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've
Again,
seen...
Really?
I don't
You've
think
never
I've
seen
May? What's that?
Okay, May is Lucky McGee's movie.
Right.
There's actually a May joke in Brick. Because Ryan Johnson and Lucky McGee are good friends, and there's some cast members between the two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you watch May and then you go back and watch Brick, you'll laugh really hard when it happens.
Okay. Nice.
Because, like, it basically a character from in the, like, a certain scene in May just walks through Brick. And you're just like, whoa, no. And it's beautiful. No, May is one of the few movies that, like, you know that thing people are like, oh, I was on the edge of my seat and I was tense and all this. I swear to God, me and two friends watched this thing for the first time. We're leaning back on my couch. About not even a quarter of the way into the movie, we are sitting on the edge of my couch. We just like creeping forward and stayed on that like tension line for the entire movie. Like it never quite lets you go. And it's phenomenal.
Cool. I mean,
Angela Bettis is the lead and she's fucking fantastic.
Okay. I mean, I haven't seen the movie, but I remember I'd always see it in like stores and stuff. I'd be like, oh, that looks cool.
But you know, May is worth seeing just because, holy crap. But yes, I don't watch, you know, many horror movies, and I'm actually going somewhere back to Rucker Hauer with this, weirdly enough. But I love the goofy fucking, like, you know, like Jason X is one of my favorite slasher films, right?
Yeah.
Like, I like the goofy end of things.
That's definitely on the goofy end.
So one of my friends who loves, like, horror movies, you know, she hosts the whole horror night and all this, has never seen Split Second.
Really?
Which is one of those movies that, like, you know, have you seen Split Second?
I have not seen Split Second either, actually.
Holy shit.
I don't know how I managed not to see it, but...
It's a Rucker Hauer film. It is basically, he's this cop in, like, a future London where there's been, like, flooding, like, rain for 40 days. That is an important thing to keep in mind. They're not kidding around. They're like, yes, it's biblical. Deal with it. And he's basically insane because his old partner got killed, and he's pretty sure, he is convinced, in fact, that it was Satan who did it.
Cool.
And so, like, he lives off of coffee, cigarettes, and chocolate. Like, that is literally all you see him eat in the film. That is it. That is all he ingests.
Huh.
Like, he just uses bags of chocolates and, like, constantly with the coffee and the cigarettes. And he gets, like, this new partner who's, like, the straight-laced, you know, nerd. And he slowly drives this kid insane. Like, it is just the funniest thing. And it is this weird science fiction. Like, I think it was, like, an HBO movie. Back when they're doing, like, a few of them.
Right. Okay.
It might have had a limited theatrical release. I don't remember now. Like, I thought I saw it in the theater, but then like, I look it up, and I'm like, it was never in the theater. But, no, it's this great, weird movie. Because it has no reason to exist. Like, it's not particularly, like, fantastic. But Rucker Hauer losing himself in essentially, like, the Harrison Ford Blade Runner role, almost. Except with the dial turned up to crazy.
Wow. Yes,
just
okay.
Fantastic.
From 1992, it says here.
Yeah, no, it is a thing worth seeing. Because, of course, the trick of the movie is, and I'm not giving anything away here, that it actually was Satan. And that, like, the entire thing of the movie is they have to kill Satan. Like, they have to kill the devil. Except, well, like, hey, again, well, like, no one believes him at first and all this. And it just, it is funny. It is, like, that weird late 90s action type thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Late 80s, whatever it was. It just kind of is, it's far from perfect, but it's that perfect moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
To where you got that sort of movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's that, like, specific type of, like, we were getting, like, the Solar Babies and all those, like, Blood of Heroes. Yet another great Roger Hammer movie.
It was, this was indeed a golden age for a certain kind of movie.
Yeah, no, and I loved them then, and out of the ones that, like, I still occasionally will revisit, like, Split Second's one of my favorites, because it's not quite a horror movie, it's very firmly a science fiction movie, but it's also, like, a very early dystopia movie.
Wow. You know, I am terrified to think what an Adam Nave film festival would look like.
I don't know either. Like, I mean, there's a few obvious things that would be on it, like Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, obviously.
Yeah. Maybe,
you know,
Quick
Full
Change.
Durham. Sure.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, no, by, like, great, like, everyone should watch these movies. It's like, you're going to watch, like, fucking Hudson Hawk and then Split Second deal with it. Like, this is just a thing that's going to happen. Then we'll move on to Josie and Speed Racer. We'll get there.
Yay. Yeah, hey, you know, I have to watch Speed Racer again. It's got a little pin in that one for me.
Yeah, it's one of those things of, like, there are moments it doesn't work.
Oh, sure.
Mostly with, like, when they try to make it too much of a kids movie with, not that it isn't a kids movie otherwise, but, like, when they do, like, the Chim Chim stuff, it unhinges a little bit.
You know, this is the Wachowskis, you know, MO. Lots of, like, stuff that just, like, amazing stuff and just stuff that doesn't work, great moments, cringeworthy moments, all just jammed together. So.
Right. But, like, the rest of Speed Racer is, A, one of the most comic book movies you'll ever see in your life.
Oh,
like,
yes.
From the direction down to, like, just impossible colors, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also just fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's what, like, growing up, like, when you think back to the Speed Racer cartoon, this is what your head says it was.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was never quite this, like, action and fun and all that. But, like, it actually is just, like, a good, fun movie. And again, it's also just so endlessly beautiful.
Yeah, oh, God, yes. Yeah.
The colors in that thing. Just, like, they're impossible colors. Like, just colors that are not nameable happen in this movie. I just, I didn't see it in the theater, which I will always regret. Apparently there is an IMAX print out there.
Wow.
And I'm like, that is one of those things. I'm like, I want to see this in IMAX someday.
Oh,
I saw
God, yes.
A little student theater out here in Portland once ran it for, like, you know, $1. So, but it's like, it was in, like, a basement classroom, like, projector hooked up to a DVD player. Like, it wasn't a big screen, you know what I mean? Like, it was a bigger screen. And it was worth doing, but, like, I want to see it, like, fucking IMAX, like,
mm-hmm.
Because I just, I don't know, it's like, I haven't taken LSD, but I'm thinking it's like Speed Racer. You know, it's just, oh, man. As we're running down on time, I wanted to mention, there was, Alan Sepinwall, who has moved on to Rolling Stone as their TV critic, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I think I knew the S, yes.
Had an interview with the woman who runs Netflix's TP division.
Mm-hmm.
And was, a lot of it was talking about the fact that, like, you know, a lot of their shows sag in the middle.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, is that something that they notice and do they have to correct? And she admitted, like, no, they notice it as a problem and that they're still trying to figure out the formatting. That, you know, people are trying to treat it like, instead of, like, episodic TV, like a 10-hour movie or whatever it is. And the problem is that a 10-hour movie, like, you have a sag in the middle. Because that's just structurally how that ends up happening. And so apparently it is a thing that they're doing and, like, they're talking to creators about and they're, like, trying to figure out.
Hmm.
That, like, they've started to, like, with their original shows, and not the Marvel stuff, because that's a different deal, although Iron Fist will be shorter. But that they are trying to do, like, more 8 or 10 episode seasons instead of 13.
Right.
So, I just think that's an interesting thing, like, that this isn't just all in our heads, you know, it's an actual problem, and they know about it and are actually, like, working on it.
That would be great.
Yeah, because again, I don't care how good whatever, I don't care how good insert Netflix show here is, but it's not a movie and it shouldn't be a movie. TV has its own language.
Right.
And I don't think that we should lose that. And yet with the whole binging thing, like, what do, right? But one of the things Steppenwolf points out is like something like Mad Men, say for him, or like The Shield or The Wire. You can binge those shows, and yet they're not, 10-hour films. Like, it still works.
Exactly.
Because they still have kind of that, like, case of the week thing to kind of keep you going. It's the person of interest thing, right? Where, like, you have to hit that sweet spot between the two universes of how you do TV.
Just going, wow.
Yes. Sorry.
No, it's okay. No problem. So no, I'm very glad to hear that Netflix is aware that they have this basic problem with how they produce their series, and yeah, because I mean, really, it's. Just what, like, I mean, just mid-season, like even season two of Jessica Jones, I just found the mid-season part to be kind of like bit of a drag.
Yeah, I mean, and what fascinates me is like a lot of the Amazon shows don't have the problem.
I know, it's, yeah.
And it's like, what's the difference there? Like, and that's the thing I can't figure out either. Like, what is, are the Amazon people holding a tighter rein?
Maybe.
Which is very possible. Or are they just getting lucky? You know what I mean?
That's possible. Or maybe they're just not approach. Maybe Amazon hasn't quite caught up, and they're still approaching their TV shows as, discrete individual episodes that can be strung together, as opposed to Netflix's vision of,
Right.
just something that shows that are designed to be strung together.
Yeah, I mean, and if I have to choose, I'd take Amazon's any day.
Yeah. And then sometimes you get remarkable success like Voltron, which I think I'm just into the midst of season five now. But man, their seasons are short. I love it. But it's just they're eminently capable of making individual episodes that are almost always also heavily serialized.
Right.
So you end on like a satisfying, you end like on a resolution that's also a cliffhanger, and it's like. Perfect.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you can pull that off, it's great, But again, a lot of people can't. It's, yeah, there's, again, TV is changing under our feet.
Yes.
I'm curious what The Expanse is going to do.
Me too. And I'm very glad that it's come to Amazon and not Netflix for these
Yes.
reasons that we are discussing right
Yeah.
now.
And I mean, again, like, The Expanse is one of those things of, like, it is very serial. Like, you can totally binge it. I kind of wonder if they're going to have, like, their season is only five episodes, since they kind of do that anyway.
That's good. That's a good point. Yeah. I seriously think that shows should just adopt the Voltron model, where it's like, we made five episodes, and that's our season, and yeah, well, we'll make it work as a season. You can check out the season finale in season three of the next, or episode three of the next season. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, why
That's
not?
all. Yeah, why not, indeed?
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
We shall see.
I'm still waiting for some kind of announcement that, like, the last half of what was going to be the first season is now, I guess, the second of the reboot remake.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I know, I'm one of the few people on Earth who apparently likes the show, but I do.
But the there's the show is made for you and those of like mind. So
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for you to watch Ready Player One and report back.
I know. I was actually going to this week, and I was having trouble connecting to Netflix when I tried to, and I was like, "I'm gonna take it as a sign. I'm gonna watch something else." And
Exactly. Gonna say.
like any sort of problem is just like, "Oh, it's a little bit chunky. I better go do something else." Just
Oh
I
no.
promise it will
Oh
happen
no.
soon.
Oh no, my muffins are gonna burn. Better check that as a sign, not watch Ready Player One. Yeah, what? I mean, really, you're saving yourself from some pain.
I have a 3-day weekend next week because it's Labor Day weekend. So I'll have time to recover mentally. So I will watch it. The other thing is, I just don't want to watch it because I know that like so much of it's going to glance off my head.
Right.
That like I don't want to watch it like on like a Tuesday if we're going to be talking about it on Sunday. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, I gotta figure out like a Friday or Saturday to like, or get up early enough on Sunday that I can watch it just before we record.
Good choice. Anyway, we should get going. I've got me some stuff to do in the afternoon, and we've just what hit the hour mark.
All right, well, we'll toss on some music.
Woo! Yeah, make that music happen.